Direct from the Broski Nation headquarters in Los Angeles, California, this is the Broski Report with your host, Brittany Broski.
A never-ending midnight sun. A never-ending midnight sun.
That was impressive. Welcome back to the Vanity Fair Oscar Broski Report. What the fuck? Okay, I have to get something off my chest really quick that's been weighing on me. Let me just kind of I'm going to get straight into it. There's no hee hee ha ha, let me do some bits. Let's get straight into it because there's something that I did Oscar Sunday night that I owe it to you guys to say that this happened, and also I need to get it off my chest because I think I embarrassed myself. And I have eyewitnesses who said I didn't, but that doesn't negate the feeling. You know what I mean? Also, my head looks like an egg. I think that Sunday went pretty well. Sunday, here's what had happened for people who don't tune in to anything else. Which, like, I don't know why you would, you know what I mean? Broski Report is more than enough, Brittany, you could ever need, ever. So, Sunday was Oscar Sunday, which we will get into my Oscar predictions and also the Oscar wins, and we will discuss because tea. And also, this is one of the first years that I have watched every single Oscar-nominated movie, and I feel very good about that, okay? Usually, I've seen about 50%. This year, I've seen them all. So, about 2 or 3 months ago, I get an offer, okay, to co-host the Vanity Fair Oscar Party Carpet with Jake and Quinn. And I was like, this is a huge deal. Like, this is the party. And like, how would I have known? I didn't know that, right? Because I haven't been kind of in that world. That's not my world. And now with like Royal Court doing its thing and like, I feel so much more at ease in this job. I've really like settled into the warm bath of what Royal Court is, which is humanizing these celebrities. And yes, that is weird. And we can dissect that some other time of like, I am such a hyperactive. Sorry, had a little Mucinex attack. The Mucinex monster was actually in my throat. He was ping ponging between my tonsils. As such a hyperactive fan of so many things, it has been strange to be like, let me lock the fuck in, right? Like the Harry of it all is, I think, number one example of that, of like, okay, but when it's time to do the work, let me do the fucking work. So with that in my mind, I was like, I'm ready to do this because the nature of this carpet is like, it's people arriving from after the Oscars. So like the Oscars end, people go home and change, do whatever, and then they come to this after party. And so I'm like, okay, Vanity Fair is obviously an iconic legacy publication. It's very legitimate. This party was at LACMA this year. Very fun, right? And it was a star-studded event. And I was like, you know what? Hell yeah, I can do that. I can do that. And so I co-hosted with Jake and Quinn. Yes, but they were together at one end of the carpet and I had my own little section right at the entrance. So people would literally turn the corner and someone from Vanity Fair would go up to them and be like, do you want to do an interview with Vanity Fair? And then, you know, it was either yes or no. And we got a great selection of people to talk to. So I had my little station. I talked to so many people. I talked to some Oscar noms, which is just gag. And I feel very, very like proud of myself for it. But the nature of like who I am and what I do, and like, I want to keep doing this for a very long time and I just want to keep getting better. So kind of immediately after, you know, the next morning I had a big call with my team and I was like, okay, what can I improve? And we had a big, you know, constructive call. And it's like, you don't get better or keep getting these opportunities by being like, oh, well, that was good enough. You know what I mean? Like, I think that there is this innate ability there to just be a conversationalist and open that door for, like, let's talk about something stupid and fun. And then how do you take that and mold it into, you know, what Conan does? By the way, let's talk about it. I got to interview Conan O'Brien, which I did not think he would say yes. And they come over and they're like, Conan said yes. I said, is he, like, was that a joke? Was he making fun of you? He said, oh, he said yes for real? Oh, right. He came over and I'm looking at my cards and I'm like, these questions are so fucking dumb. These questions are so dumb. So I'm already in my head like, okay, sure, let's just fucking do it. He comes over. He is a monster of a man. Very, very tall, very pale, very reflective, you know, with that kind of pallor of skin. And I know that because I have it myself. So we were just kind of reflecting back to each other, and it was something very, very ghostly. It was something very Victorian, very haunting. You know, no one should be, it was very vitamin D deficient. So he's there with his beautiful wife, and I start asking them questions, and he says, are you insane? Like, these questions are awful. And I said, yeah. And would you be appalled to know that these were the approved questions? So we kind of riffed on that because that's funny. Because I asked him, you're playing the toy in Toy Story 5 that teaches people how to go potty. Okay? Do you have any bathroom etiquette for tonight? And he said, that's the worst question I've ever heard. And I said, you think I don't know that? Hey, you think I don't know that? Anyway, we talked back and forth and we had a little banter going, and then he went inside, and I literally, like, thank God there was a gap after that, because sometimes it would be like, you know, celebrity, 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 and then no one for 10 minutes. And so, because it was just when people were arriving. And so Conan walked inside and I literally, like, hey, they cut the cameras on me. They go back to Jake and Quinn, and I genuinely start to cry. I mean, it's immediate in those moments. Who the fuck else did I cry? There have only been a few people that after I talk to them, like, I hold it together and then I cry immediately after they leave. Obviously, Harry was number one. This is a long time ago. This was Barbie premiere era before she went fucking cuckoo bananas, Nicki Minaj. Girl, what is going on with that? What is going on with that? That is so upsetting. It's so disappointing to just turn on a community like, oh, I can't even talk about it. Anyway, that was one. I interviewed Nicki at the Barbie premiere before she went cuckoo, and that I cried after because I'm like, wow. But that woman is gone. You know what I mean? Which is just, it's devastating. Anyway, I cried at I went to this Hollywood Reporter event where Robert Downey Jr. sat next to my table. I did not speak to him. That was when I told you Drew had dragged me over, and I said, and I ran out the door. That I teared up there. And I didn't even talk to him. He was just there. And then this was probably the fourth. Talking to Conan O'Brien, he had left, and then I had literally teared up. And I said, don't you go fuck out. The lashes are going to drip down my face. So talked to Conan. That was amazing. Conan genuinely liked to have a moment. Royal Court has a lot of inspirations for both the interview style, the aesthetics, the approach. And it's, I think, a beautiful blending of everything that I really admire. Conan's wit, his comebacks, how intent of a listener he is, really, really inspires me. And that is decades of stand-up comedy and hosting. I mean, he hosted his show for 28 years. Like, that is a well-earned, hard-earned skill. And that is my North Star. You know, someone as sharp and as quick as Conan, like, that's where I want to be. That mixed with a bit of, you know, Sean Evans research, intensive question style, mixed with obviously the Game of Thrones Renaissance Fair aesthetic, mixed with a bit of Between Two Ferns, Zach Galifianakis, but it's not as much as like a Z-Way, you know, where it really is like I'm harassing the guest almost in a comedic way, of course. But like, you know, if you come on the show, you're going to get kind of beat up. I don't want Royal Court to feel like that. I want it to feel like an even match, you know, like if we are punching, we're punching at each other, not down. So Yeah, that's it's all of those things kind of swirled into one. And so Conan being a part of that formula is just it was very, very surreal to get to talk to him. So after that, we wrapped the carpet. I talked to so many incredibly iconic people. And then after that, we wrapped the carpet. I went back to my green room and I kind of just like sat down and let my gut out for a second, because you stand there for 4 hours sucking in your gut. And then we went into the party and I have about 55 margaritas. And I mean, just one after another, because I was like, I got to catch up. Everybody here has been drinking since 8 p.m. and it's now 11. So let me catch up. And so I go in, I have three back to back, which was stupid because I hadn't eaten since about 3 p.m. And so I have about three back to back. And then we start doing our rounds. I start saying hi to people. Hi, how are you? Oh my God. Hi. How did you? You know, I get talking to some people. I'm not going to say who it was, but this is an event where, you know, get drunk, have fun. They're passing out In-N-Out burgers. I saw some celebrities where I was out. Oh, I didn't know you had it like that, like a bit messy. Like they were also doing 55 margaritas. So that's why I felt a little bit less shameful of what I'm about to tell you. After probably about the 45th margarita, we're walking around, me and my friend Elizabeth, who works for me, and we're kind of, you know, doing the rounds. And I see Jack O'Connell. Okay. I see Jack O'Connell. Okay. And he wore the fangs to the carpet! He wore fangs to the carpet. Hey. And not like, oh, it's grills, it's fangs. He wore prosthetic fangs to the... I need him. I don't give a fuck. I need him. SAS Rogue Heroes is one of my favorite shows, okay? And I've talked about it on here before. It's just some random show that I think is on BBC something. And I only started watching it because Jack O'Connell was in it, okay? He plays Patty Mayne, who is this, like, he's off the shits. Like, he plays a rogue hero. I mean, they are completely batshit crazy and it's based on real life people, but of course it's dramatized for television. And also, yeah, it's a World War II show. And yeah, it glorifies war, which I don't love, but I love the acting in it, okay? And guess who else is in it? Tom Glenn Carney, our House of the Dragon best friend. So I see Jack O'Connell, okay? And I'm thinking, like, y'all remember how intense that Jack O'Connell phase was for me. Like, it was something very, very visceral. And I see him across the room and I say, Elizabeth, that's Jack O'Connell. Like, he's actually right there. Like, right behind it. And we had to walk by him to go to the door because we were about to leave. I go, I've had about 45 margaritas. My left eye is wandering. If there was ever a time where I would have the courage to go up to Jack O'Connell, it's now. And I wasn't going to do some weird shit. I was just going to say, I'm here in
that World War II show, and you're defending I'm drunk, I'm in his ear. You're defending the British Empire, which I know you didn't want to do that. I know you didn't want to do that because you're an Irish. You played Irish, they called you Paddy, and you were not to be called in to defend the British lines in France. I'm drooling. But I know when you were there, your dad died in the show. Remember that? Your dad died. And they wouldn't even let you go home for his funeral because you had to go to the British front lines in France or hold down the Western Front. And I know that. We had to storm the beach. I know. So sorry about your dad, but also you're awesome. You're awesome at that show. And when you made them do...
Like, I'm just spouting off plot points from the show. Holding him hostage. You know, my friend Ian calls people like that punishers. People who hold you hostage, punishing you. And usually, it's funny. It's funny, okay? And obviously, I didn't actually do that. I only did it a little bit. I only did it a little bit. Okay, so I go up to him. I go, Elizabeth, I'm going to do it. She goes, okay, go do it. And I said, okay. I'm holding my shoes in my hand, by the way. I'm fucking barefoot at the party. I'm barefoot at the gig. The bottom of my feet are black. I go to Jack O'Connell, 45 margaritas deep, and I say, I just need to tell you, SAS Rogue Heroes, I love that damn show. I said, and you know Tom Glenn Carney. That's his co-star of the fucking show. He goes, yeah. I said, yeah, did you see his play? And he was like, no, man, I didn't make it out to London to see it. And I was like, yeah, me either. I was in London. All right, just want to let you know I'm a huge fan. You have a great night. I kept walking. And he was looking at me with this expression like, uh-huh. Oh. Yeah. Also, fully interrupted a conversation he was having to tell him that.
SAS Rogue Heroes, you were fucking awesome at show. You blew up those planes. It was fucking awesome. Anyway, I know you're like, your family's Irish, but you're from Derby. You're from Derby. Hey, help me, dog. Right, Jack? God, those were some good times you and I had when I was watching your YouTube videos. Hey, help me, dog. Okay, bye, Jack O'Connell.
Like, get your fucking head in the game, bitch. Having 47 margaritas at the Oscar party, you need to be serious. I was like, I'm a professional, I'm a professional. Saw Jack O'Connell, shit my pants. I'm a professional, I'm talking to all these people. Hi, how are you? Said I was like, oh, you're really, oh, we love to have you on the show. That kind of thing, right? I'm network. I see Kyle MacLachlan. Hi, my love. That's family. I'm running around. It's crazy, too. There were a bunch of Royal Court alumni at this party. So that's a really cool thing to be able to be like, how are you since the last time I saw you? Which is gag and it's stupid and I shouldn't be able to do that. But for some reason, yeah, sure, I can talk to Paul Mescal. I can talk to Kyle MacLachlan. No problem. Those are my friends. Jack O'Connell? There's shit in my diaper. I just loaded my diaper. I need to go to the bathroom and Elizabeth needs to wipe me. And then I need to go home. Like, I can't believe it. Watched by Michael B. Jordan. And I had the wherewithal to be like, I'm not going to bother him. That is my best actor. That is my 2026 Oscar winner. Best actor. He was surrounded by like Miles Canton and some of the other cat, Delroy, and then a bunch of the other cast of sinners, a bunch of just random people. Obviously, like, he's going to be surrounded all night. And then you see that crazy video of he went to In-N-Out, and there everyone was like, damn, let him eat. But I also know he wanted the Instagram picture, okay? And I respect it, because those pictures went crazy of him at In-N-Out with the Oscar on the table eating the burger. Bitch, that's, like, get the photo. You know what I mean? Anyway. I see him and I'm like, obviously I'm not going to bother Michael B. Jordan, the MBJ. I'm not going to do that. And then I saw Jack O'Connell. So that was something I did that kind of, I had humiliated myself. I had asked Conan, what are your bathroom habits? Probably won't do that again. But those are the two moments, right? Like out of the 4 hours that we were live and the whole day of prep beforehand, we had a rehearsal the day of, like it was a lot. And it was chaos. The carpet was chaos because you never know who's coming. Some of the tech was like, they were having some issues, but they fixed it. It was just, you know, you got to roll with the punches. This shit's live. You got to go, go, go. And I feel very proud. I feel very like surreal and out of body that happened. And thank you to Gabapentin and my doctor for kind of, you know, making sure I can get through those moments. But you know what? Let me tell you something. I took a Gabapentin at like 4 p.m., the carpet wasn't until 7:30. And I feel like by that time it had worn off and I just locked in. Like it's, I don't know if any fellow theater kids feel this way. I am so fucking nervous before something like that starts. And the minute it starts, baby, it's flow state. Baby, I'm here. I'm going, 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 going. It's like memorizing lines or anything like that that requires a performance. Even on Royal Court, I feel that way. I get so anxious before we start just because it's the unknown. And then once you begin, you know, whatever happens, happens. At least we're here. At least we started. It's also nice in those moments to be the host. Like you are in control of the vibe. But if it starts to go south, you can pick it back up. You can redirect. You can, you know, I think it works. I'm a Taurus. I'm type A. I'm what, like I can being in control of that vibe actually really works out well for me. Because if it was the opposite and things started to tank, that's why I do that anyway as a guest. If I'm a guest on something and the shit starts to go south, I redirect.
Because I'm a control freak, okay?
Anyway, it's nuts. This is a skill set I never, ever, ever, ever thought that I would use. When I was at the bank, when I was doing insurance, like, what the fuck? I never pictured myself as a conversationalist, as someone who was like, yeah, tell me your life story. And now it's like, yeah, I guess that was just a sleeper, dormant skill that I had. So it's pretty awesome. And I feel so lucky to have my writers, Annabelle and Sabina Metschke, who, like, they get my voice and we collaborate on, you know, what would be best for this scenario, and they begin it and we finish it together, and it's just like such a beautiful, wonderful, soul-seeing collaboration. And then Stanley, of course, and Elizabeth and my whole team. I'm just so fortunate that I have so many funny, kind-hearted, normal, I say that in quotations, people around me that just get it. And they understand both the traditional sphere and the Chronically Online sphere. You know, it's like, when to turn it off. Okay. I also need to mention that in the span of this 4-hour live stream, I talked to two victims of fan fiction. Actually multiple, but two that come to mind. And that is Taryn Egerton. Sorry. And that's also Tom Blythe. Sorry. Okay. I'd like to apologize to both of those young men because, yeah. And Tom Blythe knows. And Tom Blythe knows. So, hi. Hello, Tom. Apologies, seriously, from Team Broski. That's my fault, okay? I've talked about him in a way on this podcast that sends a chill down a lesser man's spine, okay? And he confronted it head on. I was like, you know, Tom, I've said some stuff about you on my podcast, and I'd just like to apologize. And he was like, yeah, it's been sent to me. So very, very kind. Thank you. I was like, yeah, I don't know if it was kind. It was more like caveman. After I saw the Hunger Games movie and he did that fucking Quinn audio, I came on here. And here I'm going to be like, so, Tom, when you're getting in the mindset for, like, be serious. Like, be serious. Sometimes I feel like two kids in a trench coat. Like, how did they let me in here? When I'm on here, like, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, and then I'm on here like, so, Tom, tell me when you get in your mind when you do a play versus a movie. How different is it really when you get in the... Like, who... I feel like he gave me a grace I did not deserve. Same with Taryn Egerton. When I tell you the Kingsman movies, hey, the Kingsman movies, the Elton John movie, there are so many things that dude has been in where I have, like, he was the lock screen on my iPod Touch. Do you understand? He was the lock screen on my iPod Touch. And now I'm like, Taryn, yes, tell me. So there was a bit of that where we had some fan fiction heroes cross my desk. And I am just having to come face to face with my own, you know, my own actions, my own actions that were based in horniness in the past. And that's part of it. You know, that's part of it. And it's so funny to think that, like, that's, I'm at an age now, turning 29 this year, where I don't know if that's acceptable anymore. I don't know if it was ever acceptable. So having to kind of deal with that. And that's not fun, but it is hilarious, ultimately. And objectively, it's very funny. If I'm like, I used to make ape noises on my podcast to you. Anyway, nice to meet you. Sure. This episode is sponsored by Hungry Root. Y'all have heard me talk about Hungry Root before, so you know how much I love it because it simplifies my life. Life is nuts and so busy. And so this has been such a game changer for making healthy meal choices. And I take care of all my weekly food shopping with Hungry Root. Hungry Root plans all of my meals and groceries for the week, fills my cart, and delivers everything I'll need to eat healthy every day, all while fitting my health goals and dietary preferences and budget. Unlike other food delivery companies, Hungry Root now has over 50,000 chef-crafted recipes to choose from each week, with many ready in just 15 minutes or less. And with over 1,000 grocery items like smoothies, sweets, kids' snacks, salad kits, ready-to-eat meals, and supplements, it's insanely easy to find options that fit everyone's tastes and nutrition goals. Hungry Root holds all of its food to high standards, screening out over 200 additives, including high fructose corn syrup, artificial sweeteners, and preservatives. They source only high-quality meat and seafood with no hormones or antibiotics. They offer organic produce and non-GMO options and carry trusted healthy brands like Oatly, Vital Farms, Ithaca Hummus, Harmless Harvest, and many more. Hungry Root makes it incredibly easy to get going and actually stick with it if your New Year's resolution was to start fresh with healthy eating. Most resolutions die within a few weeks of the new year, but Hungry Root makes eating healthier so easy that you can seriously stay on track with your health goals or new diet way past January. I recently got this miso salmon rice bowl that was particularly delicious. I order meals and items that are low fat, as we all know, because I don't have a gallbladder, but it's really learned my taste very well. You are going to love Hungry Root as much as I do. For a limited time, get 40% off your first box, plus get a free item in every box for life. Go to hungryroot.com/broski and use code broski. That's hungryroot.com/broski, code broski, to get 40% off your first box and a free item of your choice for life. This episode is sponsored by Rocket Money! Do you guys like to watch shows that require a subscription to a streaming service, then never use that app ever again when the show is done? Me too! But those times are behind me, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money tracks subscriptions and has the ability to cancel within the app with a few taps, saving time and avoiding charges. You can set budgets, goals, get personalized insights and regular reports, and receive real-time alerts for large transactions, upcoming bills, refunds, and low balances. Plus, the app consolidates all your accounts, checking, savings, loans, investments, into a single dashboard to give users a clear view of their financial picture. Let Rocket Money help you reach your financial goals faster. Join at rocketmoney.com/broskireport. That's rocketmoney.com/broskireport. rocketmoney.com/broskireport. Okay, let's talk about the Oscars. I'm going to pull up my predictions. I did two separate things where I said, I did one for who I think was going to win, and then I did one of who I wanted to win. Okay, so we'll go through both. This is who I thought was going to win. Actor in a leading role, I picked MBJ. I picked MBJ because I believe in hope. Because I believe in hope. And he fucking won! I felt very good about that, okay? And I feel like the SAG Awards or the actor, what is it called now? Guild Actor Awards kind of were a predictor in that. So absolutely the biggest congratulations to MBJ. Actor in a supporting role, I picked Sean Penn. One battle after another, I do believe he won. Actress in a leading role, I picked Jessie for Hamnet. Actress in a supporting role, I actually picked Teyana Taylor, but I think Amy Madigan won, which, period, and we'll talk about weapons in a second. Casting, I picked One Battle. That's who won, right? Best Picture, I picked One Battle After Another, which, like, duh. And then, and this is who I thought was going to win, okay? We'll get to my favorites next. For directing, I actually picked Sentimental Value, but I think Paul Thomas Anderson got it, didn't he? Costume design, I picked Frankenstein. Cinematography, I actually picked Train Dreams. And I can't remember who won. Was it One Battle? Oscars winners. Oh, no. Best cinematography was Sinners. That's fucking right. Makeup and hairstyling, I picked Frankenstein. Okay, there's so much to say. Sinners, this is my opinion. I saw that shit multiple times in theaters. There is something, there's a rewatchability to it. There's a timelessness to it. It does not feel dated or like it ever will be dated. Like, they really did something very magical and very special. That blending of cultures, DJ scene, the dance scene.
I have chills thinking about it.
Like, when you create a moment like that in cinema, I feel like it was a collective. Everyone was like, mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah, mm-hmm. And Sinners won Best Score, which, yeah, by the way. Fucking yeah, by the way. For film editing, I actually had picked Marty Supreme, but Marty Supreme didn't win anything, so. And then international feature film, I'm pretty sure Sentimental Value won, right? Oh, no, wait. Best Sound was F1. I'm geeking. Casting was One Battle After Another. Best Original Screenplay was Sinners. Sorry, score and screenplay.
That kind of had confused me. I can't read too well. Y'all know I can't read too well.
Okay. Yeah, those were the winners. Here were my who I wanted to win, okay? Actor in a leading role, MBJ. Actor in a supporting role, look, okay? Y'all know I am the biggest Frankenstein stan. I was addicted to that movie. I still think it is quite the feat. Like all of the, what's the word? It starts with a P. Like when the set design is functional. You know what I mean? Fuck, what's the word? I don't know. But that, you know, like the ship in Frankenstein was fully inside and outside, and like it moved, and the like everything was real, and it was, the word escapes me. I thought that that deserved some form of, you know, acknowledgement. I picked Frankenstein as cinematography. I picked it as costume design. I picked it as makeup and hair. I picked it as production design. And I picked it as sound because I wanted it to win. I wanted it to win. And I think that the best supporting actor and best supporting actress categories were completely stacked. Like it, you know, I kind of would have been happy with any of them winning. I think what Jacob Elordi did was fantastic. And I think that all of the prep that went into it, and it, you know, from all these interviews and, you know, respecting the process, like the studying he did of the, you know, movement of reanimated corpses and all these different modes of research that him and Guillermo kind of partnered together to create the creature with, even down to how on certain parts of his head, a different color hair was growing out. You know, like I appreciate all those details. I really do appreciate it. I just think that for best supporting actor, it was too stacked. So I actually picked Stellan Skarsgård. But yeah, I think what Jacob did was fantastic. But I think Stellan Skarsgård in Sentimental Value, I would have liked to see him get it. Okay, actress in a leading role. Obviously, I wanted Jesse. Jesse got it. Actress in a supporting role. Sentimental Value fucked me, girl. It fucked me up. And the sister who plays, not Nora, Agnes, that scene where the sisters are in the room and she gets up on the bed and they hug and they're crying, something like tore in me. Like something shifted. So I actually picked Inga for Sentimental Value, but I also would have liked to see Winmi from Sinners. I think that those were my two top picks. And I, you know, it's like whatever happens, happens. But those two movies were so special to me. There were so many of these movies that I was like, I genuinely enjoyed. You know, sometimes it's like with the Oscar movies, it's like, all right, Oscar bait. And maybe that makes me sound like a fucking dilettante. I don't know. But this was like, it was very hard. And it really came down to what were the nuances of the performance that I really was like, okay. So I'm happy for Amy Madigan. Fantastic. And Weapons scared the fuck out of me. Bitch, I had never seen Weapons. I watched Weapons like two nights before the Oscars because I was like, wow, a horror film nominated? I know The Substance was nominated last year, but that feels like rare. You know what I mean? For a horror movie, especially one as original and cool as Weapons, to be nominated and to have made such an impact on culture. You know, like people were going to St. Gladys for Halloween and they were doing The Run and what, like that's cool, especially for a horror film. that wasn't memed. You know what I mean? Something like Megan or like any of these movies that have been memed. The Babadook, the Baba They. Like, it's just, at what point is it still a feat of cinema and not a meme? So I will say I did not know in Weapons that they had ripped her meat bag open. Okay, no one had told me at the end that they go ahead and they rip her meat bag. When all the kids come in, they go, and they rip her jaw open. I was horrified. They had flayed open her flesh sack. I was like, oh my God, oh my God. Crazy. That movie is fucking crazy. And I liked it. It was a witch. I love that shit. Practical effects. That's what I was trying to say earlier. Practical production design. Everything is like, it works, okay? Casting, I picked Hamnet because whoever casted those children, those kids, oh my God. And of course, like Paul and Jesse, their chemistry was just, I can't believe it. There is something about picking people who have fully convinced me they are a family unit, you know? And not this, it's one of these things of like, spoiled for choice. Every single movie, I was never pulled out of it by anything, you know? So casting, I picked Hamnet. Best picture, I would have liked to see Hamnet or Train Dreams. I loved Train Dreams. We have to talk about Train Dreams. Train Dreams, for me. I know it wasn't as flashy as some of these other movies. I know that it didn't get a lot of press or, you know, people weren't really talking about it in the same way that they were Hamnet or whatever, but like, y'all know that I personally am a sucker for the movies that make you feel thrilled and happy to be alive despite the sorrow, in spite of the sorrow. And that actually the sorrow is what makes the joy so bright. Any movie that has the full spectrum of the human experience, I am going to freak out about. And there's this scene at the end that I can't think about for too long. He's had everything taken from him, yet he goes on. He rebuilds. He gets a dog. He goes back to, you know, the same plot of land that the tragedy happened on. And he's an old man at this point. And we're getting into like the 40s. Or is it? It's like the 20s, 30s, 40s through his life. And he goes up in an airplane. And bitch, that fucking scene! That scene! I was snotty crying. And it's not even like, it's a sad movie, but it's one of those that's like, oh, what a gift is it to be alive? What the eternal gift of life. Oh my God, how we take it for granted. Oh my God, so many people we've lost that we want here today that it's like we need to live for them. And by living in sorrow and walking in sadness, you do them no honor. You do them a disservice by not living your life to the fullest. So this was one of those movies where I was just like, oh my fucking God. I loved Train Dreams and I loved Hamnet, obviously. If we're talking about best picture for a drama, I don't know, girl. Hamnet. But then it's like, what was my favorite movie, right? My favorite movie is between Frankenstein and Sinners. But what did I, like, in my heart of hearts, Hamnet versus Train Dream. So I don't know. For directing, I picked Chloe Zhao for Hamnet because it takes such a special relationship between a director and, you know, everyone else on the set, but specifically the actors, to accomplish what they accomplished with Hamnet. And I just think that that should not go unnoticed. Even hearing about, you know, they had dance takes or they had silly takes to balance out how heavy the subject matter is in that fucking movie. So I think that she deserves her flowers, like over and over and over again. Cinematography, I pick Frankenstein. Costume design, Frankenstein. International feature film, sentimental value. Writing original screenplay, Sinners. I did pick Sinners Because fucking duh. I cannot believe he wrote that shit and directed. I just, Ryan Coogler, I am in awe. Writing adapted screenplay, Frankenstein. There's a theme here. Visual effects, Sinners. And Avatar 1, I'm pretty sure. Sound, Frankenstein, like I said, from the, like, shifting of the, when he's pushing the boat and for, like, all the sounds the creature makes and all the, like, I don't know, just the lab and everything. I was, but I understand, you know, that's my pick. Production design, Frankenstein. Music, original song. I know the K-pop Demon Hunters won. I have not seen K-pop Demon Hunters, and I know I'm probably missing out on a huge part of pop culture. I picked I Lied to You because that was my favorite fucking song. I picked Sinners because that shit, that soundtrack, dude, I can't, like, I'm gonna get mad. You know what I mean? Like, I'm actually gonna get mad. And then in the same vein, for original score, I also picked Ludwig for Sinners because everything, I have very rarely, and albeit I'm not a film bro. I'm not a film bro girl. But I do enjoy, Stanley made fun of me the other day. He was like, because I was having a conversation like this with him, you know, I was like, well, I just feel like the technicalities or whatever. And he was like, dude, you would love cinema. You'd love movies. You should start watching them. I was like, you know what? You're actually so fucking right. Anyway, I think that music is such a huge part of what makes a movie an experience, a viewing experience versus just people on a screen, and Sinners and blues music and the way Ludwig and Ryan Coogler collaborate is something out of a dream. It is something so flow, like they just hit a flow. They speak each other's language. You know what I mean? It is just a seamless blend of here's my idea. Okay, I'll take it from here. You know what I mean? I'm in awe of it. And Sinners, if I had my way, Sinners and Frankenstein would have won every single award. However, okay, and then makeup and hairstyling, I picked Frankenstein. So those were my picks for who I wanted to win, just out of my personal preferences. But congratulations to every single person that won. I think this year was so much fun. We were watching it from the green room. I had it set up on my phone, like at the after party, because I was like, obviously we need to know who won to riff on it and to you know, if any of these winners come in. So I'm not just like, so if you would have won, what would you like? I just didn't want to. And we were watching it, and when MBJ won, bitch, everyone screamed. Everyone shot up out of their chairs and was clapping, and it was MBJ won, MBJ won, MBJ won, MBJ won. It was so good. And then one battle, one best picture, and everyone was like, yeah, yeah, that was expected. So very, very, very eventful, very fun. This is the first year I've really been, you know, plugged into the mainframe of the Oscars. And it's very fun to celebrate art and cinema and theater, you know, because it is a form of theater in this current landscape. And we never, ever want to undervalue the importance of these type of movies and the themes that we see and relevance and timing and, you know, things like A Carpet. And you may think it's not a time to make a political statement, but it is, you know, and it's just, it's a lot of fun, but it's also, it can be very heavy. It can be, it's very important. These events and these moments and these films are very important. Representation is very important. And there were so many wins this year that were just historic, monumental. I have chills thinking about it. It was amazing. It was amazing to witness. And the energy on the carpet after was just, I've never felt such infectious joy by everyone. Everyone was excited to be there. You know, just, it was really, really fun. So thank you to Vanity Fair for having me. Thank you to my whole team. Thank you to Broski Nation for, if you tuned in, I did not expect y'all to tune in, but wow. Thank you. And the clips are cute, you know, and I'm excited to keep doing things like this because I want to keep getting better. And I think that's important. You know, if you want to do this for a long time, like I want to keep getting constructive criticism and doing better. So if I was a male director, just in light of the Oscars, if I was a male director, I would have a crazy pair of glasses. Okay, to be a good director, and they don't tell you this, you have to have a crazy pair of glasses. And they have to be a thick frame or they have to be some crazy shape. And you have to have a hat. You have to have one of those silly hats. And by silly, I mean newsboy cap. What's it also called? Flat cap. Paddy cap. That's what my Irish friends call it. A paddy cap. And I think that's funny. Because, yeah, it is. So I would, if I was a man, actually me now, I'm going to shave my head and I'm going to wear a paddy cap and I'm going to have a crazy pair of glasses. I'm not going to pluck my chin hairs from my PCOS and I'm going to grow a beard and I'm still going to wear probably a push-up bra and I'm going to put my big T.S. Madison boobs on the table and I'm going to have my paddy cap and I'm going to have glasses. I'm going to say the thing about animation. Okay. So that's what I'm going to do. For Halloween, I'm going to be Guillermo del Toro with big tits. For Halloween, the week of Halloween, I'm actually going to be alternating between Sir Duncan the Tall, Egg on. Because, you know, for Egg and also for Guillermo, like I can do, well, Guillermo has hair, actually. So maybe just for Egg, I'll do the bald cap. For Guillermo del Toro, I'm going to, actually, that's a hilarious Halloween costume and none of you bitches better steal that from me. I'm gonna do his blazer and his little scarf that he wears and the glasses that make his eyes a little bit big and the hat and I'm gonna draw on the beard and I'm gonna walk around with a copy of Frankenstein and that is fucking funny, bitch. That's comedy, mama. Yeah, mama, ever heard of it? I'm gonna be Guillermo del Toro for Halloween. Wow, I can't wait for Halloween. I'm so excited. drunk and vomiting dressed as Guillermo del Toro. Okay. Let's talk about Rosalía. La Rosalía is on tour. She opened the Lux tour last night. By the way, hung out with Lux Pascal at this event I went to recently. Mama, I love her. That's queen. I fucking live for her. We hung out and it was... We had a time. So, hi, Lux. Anyway, Rosalía, Lux. She's doing ballet! That bitch is doing ballet on the stage. She's doing ballet and singing opera. You bitches could never. Your favorite could never. And I'm serious. Like, the reverence for high art to the point where she takes it. She says, I fully understand this. And I am now going to put my own creative and modern spin on it, and I'm going to regurgitate it back out to an audience where you will now recognize some famous opera riffs, dances, techniques, because she has such an understanding and deep reverence for that art form. It's just like, that's what it's actually about. That's what it's about. And that's the shit I love. It gives me chills. It makes me horny. I can't believe it. Like, that we get to exist in the same time period as someone like Rosalía or Beyoncé, who also sings opera, who sings shit like Ave Maria in the midst of her set list. Because it's important and because they are deeply interested and fans. They're fans of these types of art forms because they're eternal. They are evergreen. They are infinite. They are never going away. They've survived centuries, okay? So, I think Rosalía, with Lux and with the album, I've been doing a lot of, I've been watching a lot of her press. I think, obviously, she's so worldly and she is so intelligent and cultured. And it's clear she spent a lot of time traveling around the world and absorbing. She's been a sponge for the last few years. And to do that and then, you know, squeeze the metaphorical sponge out on... to the table, to the kitchen counter of music. She's taken her sponge and she squeezed it onto the counter and now she's rubbing it all over, okay? I think that, I was going to say, I watched her Fashion Neurosis, okay? If you're not familiar with Fashion Neurosis, it is a podcast / show on YouTube hosted by, I'm 80% sure it's Sigmund Freud's fucking great-granddaughter. Or Sigmund Freud's granddaughter. I mean, her name is Bella Freud. And she's like a psychotherapist. So she sits there in the chair and interviews these people. But it's through the lens of fashion. And I love, 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 love that show. And the first question she asks, she has the guest lay completely flat and there's a camera on their face, like from straight above. And then there's a camera to the side. And then there's one kind of from down. And it's so intimate in the best way. And there's also a truth and a freedom in not having to make eye contact with the person interviewing you, which I think is a fun, you know, psychology trick of when these people are staring at the ceiling and they've got their hands on their chest like this, and you're asking them some pretty deep questions about their identity, their upbringing, why they make the decisions they do, what they've done in their career to get them to this point. There is a freedom in just thinking about it and saying it versus maintaining eye contact or, you know, that kind of guarded vulnerability, if that even makes sense. Of like, if someone asks you an intimate personal question, the instinct is to look away. You know, like, let me look away and think about it and answer it looking down, because it's soul bearing to make eye contact with someone and say, here is who I am and here is my truth. By removing that element, you get a more honest answer. So I just really, it was tea. She did Fashion Neurosis, and I just, it got to a point where I started taking notes. That's how much I love her. I got out a spiral notebook and started taking notes. And I was like, you know, there are these rare moments when you're in taking something, when you're absorbing art, or when you're reading, or when you're listening to music, or, you know, anything. That feeling of being seen so intimately by another person. They can be centuries dead. They can be alive today. They can be famous. They can be not famous. Whatever. When it's like, it strikes a chord of, I think the exact same way of what you just said. And I have, how rare is it to think you under, it's one of those interlinking moments of, we are more similar than we are different as humans. We have so much overwhelmingly in common, way more than we have different. And sometimes, you know, with all the media that we consume in a day, it does not feel like that. Sometimes, you know, it's like the divide across the aisle has never been more vast, but it's really not. So it's stuff like that where when you hear a turn of phrase, or when you understand a concept or what someone's trying to communicate, and it's communicated effectively to the point where you're like, I feel like I've had that thought before, or I could have come up with that, or you finish the sentence. It's like this synapses happens, and it's like, I struggle to explain it. You know what I mean? I can only explain it by this. This is stupid, but actually it's not stupid. It only sounds stupid now because I've read so much more than at the time I said this. One of the first times that ever happened to me was when I read George Orwell. I read Why I Write, and I also read, probably 1984. Maybe it was Animal Farm. I don't fucking know. But it was one of those moments where either the way he had written something or his line of thinking, you know, like his journey to get to the point he was making is exactly how I think. Where I was like, this man's been dead for however many decades, and I'm sitting here in my house in 2025 reading this book like, okay, twin. You know what I mean? Like, what a special feeling. I felt that way again when I read Oscar Wilde for the first time, where I was like, whoa, you could have plucked this out of my fucking brain, the way that, you know, his line of thinking went, or the way that some dialogue was exchanged, or, you know, something that maybe he wrote in a foreword or in a nonfiction. It's just like, wow. And there's nothing more intimate than writing, because you can put things on a page and convey things through that medium that you would struggle to say verbally, if ever, if you could ever say it verbally, and it wouldn't hit the same. Because Cillian Murphy said this recently, what he loves about fiction specifically, because I'm the same, I pretty much only read fiction unless it's a nonfiction by a fiction author that I like. He said that how rare and special is it in this life, and I don't know how else you could get this other than through reading, to get inside the inner monologue of someone else. And he likes it as an actor, as an exercise in empathy to put yourself in someone else's shoes. And that is the journey of fiction. That is kind of the, other than the point of entertaining, the point of fiction is to force yourself outside of your own head. You know, walk in someone else's shoes, experience someone else's story, live in their emotions, decision make the way that they would, you know, try to understand their justifications, things like that. It's just when those moments happen, it's like, this is what life's all about. Like, I have those moments very frequently, actually, where I'm like, this is what it's all about. Rosalia accomplishes that for me in a way that I have never, you know, it very rarely has it been so succinct and so like, Jesus. So I just wanted to say that her fashion neuroses, I think I wrote some shit down. Here are some of the notes that I wrote just as I was watching and, you know, things that were popping into my head. I said, the way she doesn't think twice about filling in her pensive gaps with Spanish. Like, she doesn't care. And sometimes she'll translate it, sometimes she doesn't. And I think that's so powerful to just be like, she's fully talking in English and then she'll be like, you know, a little phrase in Spanish and she'll keep going. And that's just for her. I love that. And at the end of the day, you know, it would zoom out to the wide of just these two women talking. And I'm like, this sounds stupid, but I hope you understand like the heart of what I'm saying of this is just two women communicating in their unique ways. And they are still being seen and heard by each other. Albeit Rosalia was speaking English to, you know, accommodate Bella did not speak Spanish. So yes, there's a bit of give and take, but at the same time, like, here are two women so solid in their identities and they're exchanging information in a way that is so respectful and is so empathetic and is so free-flowing that it feels stupid to say because that's how conversation goes, but it was just special. It was just special when she would have these moments where she would just say something in Spanish and then, you know, Bella's just nodding because you don't have to understand every single word. It's the feeling of what she's trying to convey, which that exists outside of language. So that was one thing I noted. Another thing is Rosalia said something about exploding into your womanhood. Oh my God. Exploding into your womanhood. And she talked about the transition into her 30s and how life is just beginning. Like, the 20s are horrible. Your 20s are about figuring it the fuck out. And that's not an easy, clean process. And there is no final destination. You will never figure it out. But that's the point, is you are always trying. And eventually, maybe you'll get the hang of it. But there is no, I don't know what this pressure is. Well, I do know what it is. It's an obsession with youth and beauty and how beauty is only tied to youth in a patriarchal society. So when you exist outside of that, when you let go of that idea, you are fully able to exist as a woman, as a human, in a world that does not center male validation, does not center dressing for men, speaking, you know, in a way that pleases men, existing in a world that pleases men. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. Life is so much richer and fuller than pleasing men. Men have bad taste. Have you ever seen what billionaires wear, bitch? Men have bad taste. So she said that, and then she said how she exists in the world now is better than how she existed in her 20s. So, period. If anyone's having some weird feelings about aging or getting older, just know that it gets better with age. It truly, truly does. Then she described something that I wonder if anyone relates to. And well, this is, she kind of touched on this and I was like, I know exactly what she means. So this is what I'm talking about. Maybe I just have undiagnosed ADHD, which probably a lot of you bitches are going to say, yeah. But sometimes I feel like in order to start something, I need to understand the entire comprehensive history or like a starter pack before I even touch it, like before I even start it. For example, air dry clay, crochet, sewing. I feel like I'm not qualified because I haven't taken, I don't know the history of it. I don't know the history of you know, all the different sewing techniques. I feel like I need to be exposed to literally everything before I begin even a beginner's course. And for that reason, it's paralysis and I fail to start. The Sylvia Plath fig tree metaphor. I fail to begin because there are so many things to learn that I'd rather just not learn them sometimes. But I want to learn them. I want to do it. But I get in my own way. Because if I'm not incredible at it at the first go, it's not worth doing. And that's like some gifted and talented, you know, burnout shit from elementary school that I need to work on and who fucking knows. But it's almost this fear of if I begin and I'm bad at it, I'm making a mockery out of that art form. You're also being taught by professionals, you know, not even professionals, but like I'm watching these girls sew on YouTube and I'm like, I'll never be that good. And I don't know. That's such a juvenile way of thinking. But I start anyway. I've started with clay. I've started sewing. I've started whatever. And like, it's not bad. And I have to remind myself that like, that's really not bad. I may not have the technique and the skill, but like I can get there. And that's what I did with no technique or skill. So what about if I keep doing, you know, like I have to give myself this pep talk. But that really, I just wonder if any of you guys relate to that, because Rosalia said something similar of like, sometimes I don't know where to begin, which is normal, but it's almost this fear of making a mockery of the art form by beginning. Does that make sense? Anyway. All right, guys. I think that'll pretty much do it for me. What an eventful past weekend. I have about 1,000,007 other things to update you guys on, but that'll have to do for now. We have an official playlist for Broski Nation. It's linked below. There's also an unofficial one. My songs of the week, actually, it's Untitled by McGee. But also, I've been back into Green Chatton's solo project, Chaos for the Fly. And he's got a song called Fairlies, which is fantastic. And that's kind of been on repeat. I like the score and I like Fairlies from that album. Royal Court, we release every fucking week, okay? Bob the Drag Queen was just the episode we released. He's a fucking funny bitch. It pisses me off. Go watch Royal Court. We have a Clips channel. Go subscribe to the Clips channel. If you don't want to watch me talk for an hour and 10 minutes, I don't blame you. This is a long podcast sometimes. There's a Clips channel. If you also want this podcast ad-free, there is a Patreon. Go subscribe to the Patreon. We've got merch, broski.shop. We've got a new video on the main channel, I Save Matt Damon. Go watch that, Brittany Broski. I think that's pretty much it for now. I love you guys to death. I will see you next week. I'm about to travel again. This life is crazy. This life is fuck crazy. I can't believe I said that to the Jack O'Connell. I'm actually like, it kept me up last night. Like, it kept me up last night. You know what else keeps me up? When I tried to play the banjo for Marcus Mumford. Like, I don't, this job is a humiliation ritual and I will do it gladly. Okay? Loving you guys. Have a great week. Sorry for the late upload. Today's Tuesday when I'm filming this, so it's going to come out Wednesday. I love y'all to death. Happy St. Patrick's Day! Bye.